Welcome to Season 2 of The Wayfarer's Guide to World Building, a podcast for writers by Mythos & Inc. Publishing. I'm Kyle.
I'm Emma.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Christiana.
Welcome, new and seasoned listeners, to the podcast. Special thanks to our patron, Andy Arthur, for making this episode possible. If you are a patron, send us your writing, world building, or publishing questions for us to answer in our bonus Q&A episodes, which we record as a thank you to our Patreon supporters. Yay!
Yay!
The theme is tropes in this season of the podcast. And today's trope, aliens are weird. Sometimes very weird. Their bodies often work in different ways than humans do. Whether that means they have blue skin, multiple arms, can breathe underwater, have 10 sexes, or only mate during a full moon. What makes an alien's biology unique is entirely up to your imagination, though science and a basic understanding of anatomy might inspire you in the creation of alien species. I'm Allison Alexander, she, her, editorial director at Mythos & Inc., and today I have with me...
I'm Christiana, they, them, public relations director at Mythos & Inc.
And I'm Kyle Rudge, he, him, business and marketing director at Mythos & Inc.
Yay! Today we're going to kick things off with Christiana.
Okay, before I begin, I need to give a quick honorable mention to the Southern Reach trilogy by Jeff Vandermeer.
You can't just sneak in a second answer.
I'm sneaking it in. And here's why. So if you know me, you've heard me ramble incessantly about the series before, but the alien life in it is so weird and so good, but they're so weird and mysterious that I don't think I could describe it properly. So I couldn't really use it for today, but just read it if you haven't already. It's really good. The example that I picked for today is the classic xenomorph. For those who may be unaware, xenomorphs are the famous reptilian-like aliens from the horror sci-fi franchise Alien, who get their butt kicked by Sigourney Weaver. Fun fact, my cat is named after them. Her name is Xeno. But these awesome. Aliens are really mean. They are so mean that they have another smaller, angrier alien for a tongue, and they'll eat you. I think one of the most iconic science fiction, at least science fiction horror scenes ever, is brought about when we learn how the aliens breed. So they're on the planet and they find all these eggs and they're investigating them. And then one, what's called a face hugger, explodes out of the egg and latches onto someone's face. And he's like out of it for a few days, but then eventually he comes back and everyone thinks he's better. So he sits down at the table to have dinner with his crew. And then shortly after that, an alien explodes from his chest in a very violent and dramatic fashion, aptly named a chest burster. And what I think this is such a good example of world building is that it's kind of gross, and it's so gross that it really sticks with you forever. So I will literally never forget the first time I saw the chest burster scene in Alien. Like, watching it explode out of Kane's chest was absolutely horrifying. And the face hugger scene was absolutely horrifying. And all of it was so gross and weird and scary that I was immediately consumed. I was sold on that universe. I was like, this is a scary world full of scary aliens. And it was so firmly established. And you know, it's effective world building when it traumatizes you a little bit because your dad let you watch it when you were way too young to be watching it.
Oh man. Does that mean Jaws is good world building? Because that traumatized me.
Really? Jaws did it for you? Totally. For me, it was Alien. Oh, another thing to mention is they do have acid blood.
Oh,
that will drip through multiple levels of a spaceship because it's so acidic, which is also a really cool idea.
That's going to lead to my question, which is, what were some of the other aesthetics and environment and settings that really made this horrifying? Like, having, sure, an alien come flying out and having the jump scare, but I recall this story being just terrifying to the core. At every ounce of my being throughout the whole thing felt that way. What were some of the things that you know of that led me down that path?
So the world itself, the physical world, the physical environment, the set design and everything was largely based off of a Swiss artist named H.R. Giger. And his artwork is, if you look at his artwork, you're like, oh yeah, that's the Alien franchise. Like, it is, it's really weird and organic looking, but also really alien looking. And I think the environment and the planet and the ships and everything looks so alien because it is weirdly organic. And I think that adds to the horror of it because it's not a tangible thing like technology, where it's like you see a big scary spaceship and you think, oh, well, it has to have a fuel tank somewhere. Let's blow it up, you know? But when things look so organic like that, and so alien, you have no concept of how to handle the situation. And I think that's what makes it so much scarier. That, and obviously it was just really good storytelling with the pacing and like when they had jump scares and when they didn't and all these things. And Sigourney Weaver makes absolutely everything better. But I really do think it was that kind of art style and that weird, like, or the, all the organic shapes in it. There's a lot of phallic shapes in it, which I don't know if
are terrifying. Scarier,
yes,
or not.
Yeah, but it's fair. That's enough. But it's all just like, it's the weird natural forms that you think you recognize nature in them, but it's not nature that you know.
I think so makes I'm it really wondering freaky. If these aliens need humans as their egg sacs, do they always have humans around? What do they do to reproduce when there aren't humans? Do they like stick these things in their own people's bodies?
It's not just humans. It's I don't know if it's any living host. In future movies, you do see them in non-human hosts, but they're okay. Pretty humanoid. But it's any host. So they're kind of like an invasive species, right? They go to a planet, they infect everyone, they breed, and they kill everything on the planet until it's just them. And this is a world where there is intergalactic travel. And so eventually another ship will come along and they'll stow aboard and they'll eat the crew and they'll make their way off planet kind of thing. So.
Ooh, and okay. Follow up then. If your cat is named Xeno, is it as terrifying as a xenomorph?
No, she's very fat and loud and lovable and likes belly rubs. So I would say pretty much the exact opposite of a xenomorph.
Fair enough.
All right, Kyle, what do you have for us?
Is it my turn? Okay. Okay, so I wanted to do a deep cut for aliens because, well, one, the xenomorphs were taken. So I needed something. So I went digging through all the sci-fi that I had read, and I remembered one. It was called Cycle of Fire by Hal Clement. It's hard sci-fi to the core. This book was written in the 50s. I remember reading it when I was younger and being fascinated by how the world was just so vast and so intricate. Like, it reminds me, at least the memory of it reminds me of how the science in The Martian kind of went and how it really made sense and explained. This did, but it was just completely alien in physiology and stuff. Anyways, that being said, the story was so-so, but the world was really, really cool. basically, it's a simple presence. There's a guy that lands on an alien planet and he's trying to learn all that he can. And he discovers at first what he thinks is an alien that also landed there, but it turns out just to be one of the sentient aliens on the planet. And there's a lot of cross-cultural, like trying to understand one another, a new language, trying to figure out what each others are saying, and, you know, a lot of comedy, cross-cultural dancing back and forth and trying to figure each other out. And eventually what we learn is that this alien knows that the planet itself, the planet is called Abjorman. I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's spelled really strangely. It's one of those. It's in the 50s. Good luck finding a translation. Anyways. It's a two-sun solar system that it's orbiting. And so one of the suns is this very, very hot blue dwarf star. And basically every 65 years, the entire climate of this planet just shifts from desert-like heat to ice age level. So every 65 years is flipping back and forth. We come into the story roughly around the time where things are starting to heat up. It's not quite ice age, but it hasn't completely melted the entire surface of the planet just yet. So it's kind of in that. And the human learns that, oh, this alien that I've encountered, which looks kind of like him, it's bipedal, you know, might have a different language, a little shorter, kind of gaunt, maybe ET-like in its appearance. Oh, E.T. would have been a fun one too. Anyways, they have this encounter, but he knows and he discovers this alien knows that it's going to die and it's fine with it. And the human's like, how could you be fine with this? You know you're going to die. We can get you off planet. We can teach your entire people how to be spacefaring. We can do all of these things. And the alien is like, no, this is basically, this is what I'm meant to be. And the reason for it is because if they left the entire planet would die. So essentially, they're not the only sentient race. There's a whole other sentient race also called Abjorbanites, I think, something like that. You have the cold season ones, which look like bipedal, but then you have these like weird jellyfish-like creatures that live in the heat season. And the way that they reproduce is when these cold ones will die, their bodies will decompose and become spores, which transform and embed themselves into the newborns of this other sentient race, who then carry the DNA into their 65-year lifespan, in which they die and the spores enter into the next race. And so it's just this like incredible way in which the story continues, like this planet story goes on and on and on. But if they left the planet, an entire sentient race would be eviscerated, and he refuses to do so. And it's really strange. But I felt it was really good world building, because this unique physiology of aliens has this huge deep impact on the world, the plot of the story. And it's less about, oh, aliens walk differently or breathe different air or speak a different language. But there's this entire tension of the story that rests on their unique physiology. And it only adds to the plot. It is the plot of the story.
So are there any of these aliens that are selfish and are like, yeah, I want to leave, but these other guys won't let me?
Well, we only encounter the one cold season alien.
Okay.
In this entire thing. But the impression that the cold season alien gives is that the idea of selfishness in this idea or longevity is almost, they're genetically predisposed to not. That's just not what they do.
Yeah.
Like they are drawn, like, this is my life. I live and then I die so that I can spawn on. And you get the impression that it's almost like a
very toxic codependent relationship.
Well, I was going to say children, but you know, that could also be very similar in that way. This is like them reproducing and choosing not to could be terrible.
Reminds me, it's the concept of like two things evolving side by side dependently on each other is really interesting to me. Like I'm trying to think if there are any species on Earth that are like, I'm sure there are a bunch that are like 100% dependent on another species to exist.
Oh yeah, if you want to design an alien, like go into a deep dive into weird animals and biology on Earth, and you'll get some really interesting.
I know
stuff.
My favorite is carcinization, where things keep evolving into crabs. It's happened 5 separate times. Things have evolved into crabs.
So weird,
isn't it? That's kind of what I was thinking of when you're describing this.
Well, I want to see a science fiction story where we've all evolved into crabs at that point.
Futurama's Dr. Zoidberg.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
That is our future. I love that.
Well, my example is the Goa'uld from Stargate SG-1. That is Goa'uld. some characters just say Gould in the show because I think they just don't care about pronouncing it properly. But, you know, gotta be proper in a publishing podcast.
Yes.
So these aliens are parasitic worm or snake-like creatures that require a host body to live in, and they particularly like taking humans as hosts, and is really gross. They burrow in through the neck, and they wrap themselves around the spine and extend these threads into the brain, and then they have the ability to suppress the human's consciousness and take over the body. Most of the Goa'uld are evil, and they pretend to be gods, cruelly ruling over planets or galaxies. Their tendency to be evil, interestingly enough, comes from having genetic memories and using a device called a sarcophagus to extend their lifespans, and using the sarcophagus regularly has psychological side effects that basically turn you into a supervillain. So all these Goa'uld are just horrible people. I think this is good world building because the show explores so many interesting details about the biology of these aliens through the plot, characters get taken over by gold and humans need to understand how so they can attempt to remove them.
That was going to be my question. Can they be removed?
That was totally what I was thinking.
So human technology can't do it. They kind of try, and the gold can like let out this toxin. So if they do try, yes, the gold will die, but so will the human. And since the gold are like evil, they would never nicely let their human live. You know, they're always going to kill the thing with them.
Were there ever any signs other than behavior that somebody had been taken over by one of these creatures?
Oh, yes. Sometimes when they're like particularly mad or upset, it seems their eyes will flash gold, and then you know, oh, that's a gold. But mostly they can like pretend to be the person. I'm trying to remember if they have the person's memories. I think they do. So that makes it even more difficult.
There's not like a gold detector or something. They have to like get a, you have to go to brain scan to get through here.
I feel like they do figure out a way to tell later on in the show, but it's tough business, man. Who knows if you've got a snake in your head or not?
We might all have snakes in our head and not
That's
even
right.
know
it. Well, I haven't been sleeping in sarcophagi, so I'm betting it's not me.
Well, that's like, where you and I differ, Kyle.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I didn't want to out you.
So we've got a couple announcements before we get to the questions you should ask yourself if you decide to play with this trope in your novel, the trope of aliens are weird. If you think this podcast is at least $1 worth of education and entertainment, consider supporting the show at patreon.com/mythosandinc. Our patrons are each assigned a mythical creature, and my favorite, the kitsune, represents the $2 per month tier. So head over there and see if your favorite creature is there, and check out all the rewards.
Using the magic of technology to pause time for just a moment here to ask a really important favor. If you're enjoying this podcast and want to hear more of it, the most helpful thing you can do is to write us a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to our podcast. Positive reviews are the number one way for new podcasts to get more listeners, which in turn will let us do all sorts of cool things like transcribe all our episodes, and from recording bi-weekly to maybe even weekly. You can go leave us one right now. I promise I'll keep time paused until you get back.
So what should you ask yourself if you have an alien species in your novel? Christiana, you go.
I would say, have you considered making them real scary? They're my favorite kind. But
of course, that's
what a selfish question.
Exactly. But to add to that, if you are going to make them scary, what makes them scary? Because Allison's example also seems pretty scary to me, but isn't as in your face as acid blood, face hugging, chest burster aliens. So maybe make them scary and how?
I would add to that, if they are scary and evil, consider how maybe some of them aren't.
Yeah.
Like even in Stargate, there comes a race of golds. They call themselves something else that aren't evil. And so it's kind of nice not to have that totally black and white species.
Yes.
Kyle, what do you got?
Mine is, can your alien physiology be more than just something like extra arms? Mm-hmm. So how can the alien physiology add to or even become a crucial component of your plot or conflict of your book?
My question is, how can you reveal biological details about your alien through plot instead of just telling the reader? Can you reveal new information as the plot progresses?
How can they do that?
Show, don't tell.
If they only had two arms, there's no way they could do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the hosts of The Wayfarer's Guide to Worldbuilding are also staff at Mythos & Inc. Publishing, where we publish books for geeks by geeks. At the end of each podcast episode, we give you a little insight into the world of book publishing by sharing what we've been up to. What you been up to, Christiana?
We've been on the hunt for a freelance publicist, and submissions closed yesterday. So we'll be going through those and seeing if there's going to be a new team member for a little while.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I was I was going through all my old files and stuff and projects that Allison and I had done, and I found this really cool series that we were a part of. We called it All Who Wander, and it dealt with all of the Lord of the Rings movies and books, and kind of did a really in-depth intellectual and comedic analysis of all of that. And it's a 9-part series. And so I was like, oh man, is there a way that we can
record?
Oh man. And I'm next year, September, is that Lord of the Rings on Amazon Prime coming out?
Oh yeah.
And I'm thinking like maybe we can like maybe not re-record them, but certainly edit them and re-release them to maybe our Patreon supporters.
Lord of the Rings. That sounds like a great idea.
There were some incredible people, like people who knew Elvish were a part of that podcast. Like
yes,
legitimately.
That was a fun podcast. I'm excited now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I have been finishing up edits actually to Voice of the Banished by Shelley Campbell. You keep hearing us mention this book on our podcast and you will continue to hear about it because it's awesome. So I'm really excited to get that into layout soon. And if you're looking for a sci-fi and fantasy writing community on Discord, go to mythosinc.com and join ours. And if you have any questions, suggestions, or comments, email us at podcast@mythosinc.com or tweet to us at Mythos and Ink. We love hearing from you. Until next time, fellow wayfarers, go build worlds.
Bye.
Bye.